The Royal Gelatin Hour, directed by Rudy Vallis. Royal and Rudy invite you to listen tonight to the finest cast we have ever assembled. Tonight's stars, Noel Coward, Gertrude Lawrence, Ed Wynn, Eddie Peabody, the Don Cossacks, John Gunther.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Vallis and company. Superlatives, as Graham hinted, are in order this evening. A fortunate series of circumstances permits us to present what looks from here like the most attractive list of acts we have gathered together in many a moon. Let's run over the names and numbers again, Graham. First,
Noel Coward and Gertrude Lawrence.
The brilliant English actor, playwright, composer, with England's finest comedienne in a comedy sketch from the current Coward Broadway attraction, tonight at 8:30. With them is Walter Pellissier of their company.
Ed Wynn, the perfect fool.
In a dash of perfect foolishment, assisted by the ubiquitous McNamee.
Ubiquitous?
Meaning omnipresent, existing everywhere, always hanging around.
Thanks.
Next,
Eddie Peabody, the ubiquitous banjo player.
Where fingers seem at least to be everywhere when he has that banjo on his knee.
The Don Cossacks.
The famous singing organization of exiled white Russians on their annual visit to our microphone.
John Gunther.
Celebrated foreign correspondent, author of Inside Europe. Once over again, lightly, Graham, we have with us this evening
John Gunther, Eddie Peabody, the Don Cossacks, Ed Wynn, Gertrude Lawrence, Noel Coward, and the ubiquitous McNamee.
Dancing mood, a gay romancing mood, whenever I'm with you. The music seems brighter, my troubles are lighter too, when I'm with you. I'm in a merry mood, a light and airy mood, whenever you are. I feel like a feather when we dance together, dear. So let me hear.
I want to hear a rhythm that has a strength in its heart. Music that's got a kick in it.
It's really heavenly the way you follow me. You seem to know my mood. You know how to chime in when I'm in a dancing mood.
War clouds again piling up in ominous thunderheads on the European horizon, with a dozen war machines in gear and ready to go at the drop of a hat, we bring you a man who knows perhaps better than any other the story behind the story and the headlines of despair that reach us out of Europe these days. He is John Gunther, one of the world's ablest newspaper men. For many years, foreign correspondent of the Chicago Daily News. Author of the current bestseller, Inside Europe. He knows the men behind the news, the captains and the kings, the ministers and the dictators, the cast of characters in the drama of diplomacy and death. Mr. John Gunther, author of Inside Europe. As many of you know, Mr. Gunther's book is chiefly concerned with personality, the men in power, or those seeking power in Europe. What most impressed you about these men, Mr. Gunther? As a group, I mean.
If any general remark is possible, Mr. Valley, it's this somewhat unstartling one. They are all human beings. Behind the headlines are policies, and behind the policies are men. These men, even the sternest of the dictators, have colds in the head just like the rest of us. They have to eat and drink. They have, most of them, friends, families, hobbies, secret ambitions, private sorrows. And their early careers, before they reached international eminence, almost always were surprising.
For instance,
perhaps you can tell me what great modern minister of finance once wrote songs for musical comedies.
No, I'm afraid I can't.
It was none other than Dr. Schacht, the juggler of the German Reichsbank. Another finance minister with a whimsical sideline is Mr. Neville Chamberlain, Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer. Mr. Chamberlain loves birds as well as budgets. During a desperately serious financial crisis a few years ago, he wrote a letter to the Times announcing that he had just seen a bird known as a gray water wagtail in a London park.
That ended the crisis, I suppose.
It probably helped. To get back to the early careers of the great and the near great, I suppose everyone knows that Maxim Litvinov, the Russian foreign minister, worked for years as a clerk in a publishing house in London. He met Lenin for the first time in, of all places, the reading room of the British Museum. Then there is Senor Largo Caballero, the Spanish prime minister. He was a house painter by trade.
Adolf Hitler was once a house painter too, wasn't he?
Yes, I believe so. But he probably isn't exactly proud of that. He wanted to be a serious artist at one time, but he was refused admission to an art academy in Vienna before the war. Signor Mussolini, as you know, used to be a newspaper man himself after he got tired of teaching school for $10 a month. Joseph Stalin, on the other hand, once studied for the priesthood.
What would you say are the outstanding differences between Hitler, Stalin, and Mussolini? Mr. Gunther.
Once I wrote that people worshipped Hitler, feared Mussolini, and respected Stalin. Or you could put it that Hitler rules by emotion. He is a sort of prophet. That Mussolini rules by intellect. Whether you like him or not, he is an extremely intelligent man. And that Stalin rules by power of will and character.
What do you think of Blum, the French prime minister?
I think he is one of the most courageous men ever to hold office anywhere. I hope he lasts.
And do you think all these so very human and charming gentlemen will be able to keep the peace, Mr. Gunther? More directly, do you think a general European war will start in 1937?
Mr. Valley, wars are catastrophes. Unlike typhoons or hurricanes, they are made by men, not by nature. But like typhoons and hurricanes, their arrival is almost unpredictable. It seems to me that no power, not even the fascist powers, want war at the present time. A war, if it comes, will be the result of some disastrous accident.
What do you think will be the eventual outcome in Spain?
My feeling, Mr. Valley, is that the loyalists still have a fair chance to win. It all depends on how many German and Italian troops come to the aid of the rebel chieftain, General Franco.
If there is hope for peace in Europe, in what direction does it seem to lie?
I think, Mr. Valley, it lies in cooperation among the great democracies, America included.
To get back to personalities, Mr. Gunther, what is your own hobby?
People, Mr. Valley, particularly fantastic people. People like my friend, the Macedonian terrorist, who kept a rose farm in the Valley of Roses. and who languished there, sniffing rosebuds, between assassinations.
And is he your favorite person?
No. I prefer my friend, the chief of police of Zagreb, Yugoslavia. This gentleman keeps his own tonsils pickled in a jar on his desk. Next to Gracie Allen, I like him best. If you ever get picked up for speeding in Zagreb, Mr. Valley, just mention my name and compliment the chief on his pickled tonsils.
I'll do that, Mr. Gunther, although I never drive fast in Yugoslavia. Thanks for the tip anyhow, and thanks for a very informative 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Valley.
Yourself a tall, refreshing glass of orange juice, you wouldn't reach into the pantry for a bottle of orange extract, would you? You'd reach for a couple of fine big oranges, because you know that it takes real oranges to give you the natural flavor of a juicy, sun-ripened orange. And that's exactly why Royal uses the flavor of real oranges in Royal Orange Gelatin. No artificial fruit flavors are ever used by Royal. Every flavor comes straight from the fruit itself. Juicy oranges and lemons, choice limes, fine ripe strawberries, raspberries, cherries, and pineapples. During the growing season, these fruits are inspected for Royal and the entire crop is purchased. So Royal can afford to give you gelatin containing the flavor of real fruit at a cost of just about a penny a serving. And the gelatin used by Royal is the finest that money can buy. Pure, wholesome, odorless, this grade A gelatin blends perfectly with the real fruit flavors to give you the actual taste of the fruit itself. During the past 3 years alone, more than 1 million families have switched over to Royal gelatin. And today, doctors all over the country recommend Royal gelatin as a wonderfully wholesome food for growing children. Serve delicious Royal gelatin tomorrow night. You have a choice of 7 real fruit flavors, all selling at a very attractive price.
Mr. Irving sees his latest, Saskatchewan, with an interpolation from the Pink Lady of that lovely melody and lyric by the banks of the Saskatchewan. What a delight when I think of the night that I met you on
Saskatchewan.
Oh, what a thrill was the spill down the hill I have set you on
in Saskatchewan.
Swift as the breeze with the race and the skis I had bet you on
Saskatchewan.
I walked ahead while you rode on the sled that I fetched you on
in Saskatchewan.
We might have been in the Alps, just like you see in the papers, risking a couple of scalps and cutting Canadian capers. It's going to be nice to come back to the ice that has sketched you on.
In Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
I charter a plane or a honeymoon train that I'll get you on.
In Saskatchewan.
Bring my loved one home to me. True, dear one, true, I'm trying hard to be. But hear me say, it's a very, very long, long way from the banks of the Seine for a boy to go and stay by the banks of the Saskatchewan.
In
Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
I'll charter a plane or a honeymoon train that I'll get you on. In Saskatchewan.
Presenting now, Noel Coward and Gertrude Lawrence in The Red Peppers, a sketch by Mr. Coward. Versatile, brilliant, brittle, and charming seem to be the four leading adjectives applied with great regularity to Noel Coward over the past 10 years in London and New York. He is certainly the most brilliantly versatile figure in the modern theater. As a playwright, his work ranges from the high comedy of Private Lives and Designed for Living to the pathos of Cavalcade and the sharp tragedy of The Vortex. As a composer, you are in his debt for the charming tunes from Bittersweet and for many a popular hit song. As an actor, most of you have seen him on the screen in The Scoundrel. If you are in New York and lucky about tickets, you might be able to see him this week in Tonight at 8:30, a series of 9 one-act plays, one of which in radio form you will hear presently. Miss Gertrude Lawrence, leading lady in Tonight at 8:30, has been seen far too infrequently in this country since her first American appearance in Shallow's Review. You will see her on the screen soon with Charles Laughton in Rembrandt. Tonight marks her debut on the American network. Those of you who are familiar with the sophisticated glitter of the usual Coward Lawrence style may find their playlet tonight surprising, for they desert the clipped accents of Mayfair drawing rooms for the broad cockney of the definitely lower classes. They'll tell you more about that, however. We are proud to present Noel Coward and Gertrude Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. Valley. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Our sketch tonight requires, I think, some slight explanation for an American audience. It's about the two red Peppers, George and Lily Pepper by name, a small-time music hall turn, or vaudeville act, playing the provincial houses. Vaudeville in England, you see, has not yet been taken over by your Mr. Valley. It still exists, and the red Peppers are part of it. They may not be very good. Mr. Valley possibly would never hire them. But they do make a living. They have been married for many years and in the profession since they were children. The scene, suppose you set the scene, Gertie.
All right. The scene is the stage and later a dressing room in a north of England music hall, a vaudeville house in a provincial city, a town about as large as, say, Reading, Pennsylvania. As the sketch starts, the two red Peppers in sailor costume are standing in the wings awaiting their cue. From the wings, George Pepper speaks.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'll allow my wife and myself a few moments in which to change our costume, we will have much pleasure in presenting to you our famous nautical extravaganza. Thank you, Bert. That's right.
Now we are.
Oh, hello, Cop. How are you?
What, yeah.
Oh, what a lot of people. Must be a training. Oh, what's to be done with the drunken sailor? So the saying goes. We're not types, but we're none too bright. Great Scott, I don't suppose. We've lost our way and we've lost our plan to make the thing complete. We've been and gone and lost the blooming fleet. Has anybody seen our ship? The HMS Peculiar. We've been on shore for a month or more. When we see the captain, we should get what for. He's home, hearty, sing glory, hallelujah. A lady bold as she could be. Pinched our whistle with the golden key. Now we're in between the devil and the deep blue sea. Has anybody seen our ship back?
Here, Jack.
What?
Who was that lady I saw you walking down the street with the other day?
That was no lady. That was my wife.
Wait for it.
Jolly songs and stories.
That's right.
Listen, was that your little dog I saw you walking down the high street with on Monday morning at 10 o'clock?
Yes, Jack, that was my little dog you saw me walking down the high street with on Monday morning at 10 o'clock.
What's his name?
Fruit Salt.
What do you mean, Fruit Salt?
Ask him. He knows.
Keep it clean, keep it fresh, keep it fragrant.
That's right. Hey, Jack, where was you last night?
Where was I last night? Cemetery.
Oh, blimey, anybody dead?
All of us.
Hey! That's a place for a minute.
Yeah. Charlie, I got little to ask you.
You got little to ask me, Jack?
That's right.
All right, Jack, little.
Why he's getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning like a pig's tail?
I don't know, Jack, why he's getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning like a pig's tail?
Twirly.
No! Jack, I've been very worried about you lately.
You've been very worried about me?
I've been very worried about you lately.
Pourquoi? French.
I don't know, I heard you had adenoid.
You heard I had adenoid?
I heard you had adenoid.
So don't speak of it.
Why not?
Adenoid me. Oh, what's to be done with the girls? I'm sure only our tars astray. What's to be done with the drinks galore that make them pass away? We got wet ears from our first 5 beers. After that, we lost control. And now we find we're up the blinking pole. Has anybody seen our ship? The HMS suggested.
she's sailed away across the bay. We haven't had a smell of her since New Year's Day. Heave-ho, my hearties, we're getting rather wretched. We pulled our money, spent the lot. And the world forgetting by the world forgot. No, we haven't got a penny for the you-know-what. Has anybody seen that?
Now then.
Oh, now then what?
Now then what?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, you don't you?
No, I don't, so shut up.
I suppose you don't know you mucked up the old exit.
Well, it wasn't my fault.
I suppose you didn't drop your telescope, did you? Having dropped it, you didn't have to go back for it. Leaving me to prance off all by myself.
Well, the exit was too quick.
Same as what it's always been.
It was too quick, I tell you. It's been too quick the old week. The old number's too quick.
Bert Bentley takes that number at exactly the same tempo as he's always
done. Oh, you and your Bert Bentley. Just because you stand your Welsh rabbit at the Queen's, you think he's Rudy Valley.
Bert Bentley's the finest conductor in the north of England, and don't you make any mistake about it.
Best conductor, my foot. I suppose he thinks it's funny to see us leaping up and down stage like a couple of greyhounds.
If you're a greyhound, I'm Fred Astaire.
You're Fred Astaire, all right, with a bit of Pavlova thrown in. Yeah, you're wonderful, you are, and then you can't do it except behave yourself like a gentleman.
Oh, so except to behave like a gentleman, do you? That's a good one coming through.
Oh,
will.
Shut up, you make me tired.
I make you tired. I suppose it's me mucked up the exit. I suppose it's me dropping me blasted telescope.
Now, look here, George Pepper.
Can you stop George Peppering me? Why can't you admit it when you're in the wrong? You mucked up that exit. Nobody else did. You did.
But what if I did? It was an accident. I didn't do it on purpose.
Lily. Lily, it doesn't matter how you did it or why you did it. You did it!
What's on now?
Mabel Grace. She's nearly finished.
Well, she's been finished for years as far as I'm concerned.
Mabel Grace is an artist, and don't you forget it. She may be a bit long in the tooth now. She's a bigger star than you'll ever be, so there.
Oh, you make me sick. Sucking up to the top liners.
Who sucks up to the top liners?
You do. Look at Irene Baker.
And what's the matter with Irene Baker?
Well, when last heard from, she was falling down drunk at the Empire Artley Pool.
That is a dirty lie. Irene never touches a drop till after the show, and well, you know it.
Irene. Was Miss Baker this and Miss Baker that the last time you saw her?
That's all you know.
Oh, trying to make me think you got off with her, eh? Oh, what a chance.
Oh, shut up, Nagy.
Irene.
Listen, if a day ever dawns when you can time your laughs like Irene Baker does, I'll give you a nice red apple.
Time the laughs? That's a funny one. The fat lot of laughs I'll get when you write the gags.
If you're dissatisfied with your material, you know what you can do with it.
Yeah, I know what I'd like to do with it.
Can't even do a straight walk-off without balling it up.
Oh, we're back again at that, are we?
Yes, we are, so there.
Now, look here, just you listen to me a minute.
Well, I've been listening to you for 15 years. One more minute won't hurt.
Oh, is that so? Well, I'm sick of you and the old act. It's lousy anyway.
Lily, the act was good enough for my mum and dad. It's good enough for you.
Yeah, well, things have changed, you know, a bit since your mum and dad's day. There's electric light now and telephones. A little invention called the moving pictures. I mean, everyone wants to see the red peppers for £3 when they can have Garbo for ninepence.
That's just where you're wrong, see? We're flesh and blood, we are. Public would rather see flesh and blood any day than a cheesy photograph. Put Garbo on a Saturday night in Devonport and see what had happened to her.
Ah, you ought to know. Look what happened to us.
It wasn't Devonport, it was Southsea.
Well, wherever it was, the fleet was in.
Well, I think the act's so lousy, it's a pity you don't rewrite some of it.
Ever tried going into St. Paul's and offering to rewrite the Bible?
Oh, very funny. Oh, very, 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 very funny. You're wasted in the show business, dear. You ought to write for comic cut, sure.
Yeah, I could think I'd better gags than you at that. That wasn't a lady, it was my wife. Right. A lot of oily old chestnuts. And they were has-beens when your grandmother fell off the eye wire.
And what, may I ask, has my grandmother got to do with it?
Oh, only that she didn't fall soon enough, that's all. Who is it?
Me, Bert Bentley.
Oh, come in, old man.
Oh, old man.
Well, 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 how's six?
Much and grumble. Sketch on?
Yes, the old cow's tearing herself to shreds.
Oh, it's a pretty strong situation she's got in that sketch. I watched it from the side, first house on Wednesday.
Well, she nearly got the bird second house.
Yeah, two refined Dutch sets of this date.
Of this date is as good a date as you can get, you know.
Yeah, well, I've played better.
Oh, shut up, depression.
Oh, well.
Sorry I can't offer you a drink, old man. Fed hasn't brought it yet.
Oh, that's all right, George. I'll have one with you in between the houses. Oh, by the way, don't you think that exit of yours is dragging just a bit?
Would you say dragging?
Oh, don't take any notice, though. She don't know what she's talking about.
No, my husband is right, Mr. Dentley. My husband is always quite right. Doesn't take any notice of me. I don't count. I'm only a fiend.
Will you dry up?
But I should like to say one thing, Mr. Dentley, if you'll forgive me for stepping out of my place for a minute. And that is that if you take that exit any quicker second house, I shall not drop my telescope. Oh, no. No, I shall sock you in the chops with it.
Here, who the hell do you think you are talking to me like that? I didn't come over to be insulted by a cheap little comedy act. Here.
What's that? What's that? What's that? What's that?
You heard. You're damn lucky to get this date, and you know it.
Lucky?
Saucy monkey.
Lucky? Why, it's a filling, that's all, a filling.
Well, make the most of it while you've got it.
Get out of here, you're tucking out in a little squirt.
Yeah,
lucky for you, we got another show to play.
Not so lucky, I've got to look at it.
Well, it'll be the first time. Maybe we'll get the tempos right for a change.
You set your tempos Monday morning and they haven't been changed since.
Now, that's your story. Don't you forget you were sober Monday morning.
Are you insinuating that I drink during the show?
Ah, insinuating? That's a laugh. I'm not insinuating. I'm stating a fact. Oh, you can smell him a mile off.
What a lady. And what an artist, too, I don't suppose.
George?
Yeah.
Don't adopt that tune to my wife.
I was sent for the manager, George. Go on, send for Mr. Edwards.
Look here, you two, I've had about enough of this.
You've had about enough, have you? What about us? I should like to tell you one
thing. Oh, put it where the monkey put the nut.
Pepper, 3 minutes.
My God, we're off. Here, off it. Go on, get back to your
seat. Remember, Mr. Big Noise Bentley, the tempo's slow at this house or you'll get a telescope in your funny-looking puss. Come on, George.
All right, old girl, I'm coming.
Thank you, Miss Lawrence and Mr. Coward. I hope the tempos were okay. The Royal Jellison Hour continues with Ed Wynn, the Don Cossacks, and Eddie Peabody, all eagerly awaiting their turn at your loudspeaker. Small Mr. Peabody, one of my old pals, is one of our favorite people. We've had him around once every year, I think, since the variety show began. He gets more showmanship out of a banjo, we believe, than Rubinoff does out of a fiddle. This is Eddie, playing with all my heart, with all his heart. An example of what 10 expert fingers can do when confronted by a banjo in a minor classic. Eddie Peabody plays Poet and Peasant Overture.
heart, we're dancing, it's time for romancing, for just we two. Heart to heart beating, my lips keep repeating, I love but you. Dreams of the future arise into little blue, little eyes. Sweetheart, let's grow old together. Love like ours will never die. Hand in hand in fair and stormy weather, as just you and I. On our golden wedding day, dear, I love you, I still will say, dear, so let's grow old.
If you're like a great many women, you haven't served homemade chocolate pudding very often just because it's been such a troublesome dessert to make. You've had to mix and measure the various ingredients, cook the pudding for half an hour, and even then, it might turn out lumpy and starchy tasting. But now there's no reason why every woman can't serve delicious chocolate pudding as often as she wants. Because now you can buy Royal chocolate pudding, smooth, creamy chocolate pudding that tastes better than homemade and costs less to serve. And Royal chocolate pudding is no trouble at all to prepare. No double boiler is needed. You simply empty the package into a saucepan, add milk, and bring to a boil while stirring. In 5 minutes, your pudding is completely cooked, smooth as velvet. Royal chocolate pudding is made with arrowroot, a superfine starch. Arrowroot makes your pudding smooth, cooks fast, digests easily. No wonder Royal chocolate pudding is such a wholesome dessert for children. Royal pudding comes in two flavors, chocolate and vanilla. It sells for the same attractive price as Royal Gelatin. Get several packages tomorrow. Royal Pudding is now being featured at your grocer.
For me to go into a lengthy and flattering introduction to our next guest would be an impudence. He is one of the truly great entertainers of our time or any time. Ed Wynn, of course.
Hello, Rudy. Thank you. Isn't that lovely? Is that Graham?
Yes.
I didn't know Graham. Oh, you know Graham?
Why, yes, Ed. He does the sales talk on this program.
Oh, he does the sales. He does the sales talk on my program, too. Well, that one guy's got enough wind for two sales. I'll say that. I'll say that about Graham. My goodness. Yeah, I think he's from the Windy City. Are you, Graham?
No, Ed. I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Is that so?
Yeah, St. Paul.
St. Paul, Minnesota. That's the strangest thing. Rudy, don't go. I want to talk to you, Rudy. Come here. I've got a friend named Paul who lives in St. Paul.
That's all?
Yes. Today I was walking along the street and I thought I saw this friend of mine, Paul, from St. Paul.
Yes.
I went up and I tapped this fellow on the shoulder. I said, hello, Paul.
Uh-huh. What happened?
He turned around and he said, why, this St. Paul. The man being where are you from, Rudy? I didn't know Graham's from St. Paul. Where are you from?
Well, Ed, believe it or not, I was born in Vermont and raised in Maine.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Is that a fact?
That's true, absolutely true.
You were born in Vermont and raised in Maine? How old were you before you came to this country the first time? Well, I only am.
Just a minute, Ed.
Yes?
Where are you from?
Oh, well, that's possible. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Philadelphia, eh?
Yeah.
Well, then the Liberty Bell isn't the only thing over there that's cracked.
Oh, I see. I see. In the way we're talking, it's like a game of knock-knock. That's what it's like.
Well, I'll tell you, Ed.
Yeah?
You know these knock knocks?
Yes,
sir. It's about the 12th line down. I hear you've invented a new game called...
I didn't hear that, Rudy. I'm enjoying this.
Ed, I hear you've invented a new game called Bye Bye.
How do
you play
it?
Yes, how do you play it?
Oh, it's such a silly game I've invented, this Bye Bye game. It's silly. You explain it to him, Graham.
All right. I'll tell you, Rudy. Yes. Ed's new game is like Knock Knock with this exception.
Yes.
It can only be geographical.
That's right. Only geographical. That's the whole game.
Who's telling this? Well. Names of cities, states, and countries. The idea is, Rudy, when Ed says Bye Bye, you say, where are you going?
Yeah, that's
right. Do one with Rudy, Ed. Go on.
Yeah, I'll do it. All right. Bye Bye.
Well, where are you going?
Sioux Falls.
Sioux Falls, North Dakota?
No, Sioux Falls for any guy she meets. You see the idea of it?
That's a great idea.
That's a great game.
Look,
that's a great game.
Suppose you do one with Graham.
You want me to do one with
Please.
Graham? I'll do one with Graham. Let me think now. Bye Bye.
Where are you going?
Constantinople.
Constantinople, Turkey?
No, I can... I can stand it, no pull off, but I can't stand you. No. I got twisted up, but
that's a great game, Ed. That's a great one. But, you know, I think our listening audience would like to have one of your games that you originated sometime. One of your old operas.
Uh-huh.
Graham, what opera do you think Ed ought to do tonight?
Do you want me to revive an opera?
Please, wait a minute. He did one in 1932, I think it was. I'll never forget.
What was that?
The opera Carmen, Ed. Come on.
Carmen? Carmen. The old opera Carmen in 19... I'll revive it. I'll do it. I'll do it. I'd love to do it. Look, wait, Rudy. I'll tell you. See, I'm your guest, you see? So you've got to be a perfect host.
I suppose.
This is the first time... You'll have to sing the song between the first and second act to make the opera realistic.
Rather fresh guest, don't you think, Graham?
No.
All right.
He's trying to get back at me. Now, will you do it now, Rudy? You sing that famous tobacco song from Carmen there.
Which one is that?
No one could sing it like you. It's the cigar song. Karuna, Karuna. You sing that.
All right, Ed.
You sing that, will you? All right. Now, don't go, Rudy. Well, as the curtain goes up on the opera Carmen, we see Carmen herself. Isn't that interesting?
That's beautiful, Ed. Beautiful.
Huh? Isn't
beautiful.
That wonderful?
Yes, it is.
Graham?
Yeah.
Now, we see Carmen, and she has on a Spanish shawl. And that shawl she has on, you see?
Yeah.
And you see Carmen, you see Carmen, and she's very thin.
Uh-huh.
She is so thin, she's just like a bone. Just like a bone. In fact, her own dog buried her 3 times in 1 week. Look, Graham.
Yes,
this
ahead.
Is very interesting.
All right.
Now, you know, the whole opera of Carmen is about gypsies.
Yes.
Gypsies are not very clean people, you know.
Well, Ed, you, what do you mean? They don't wash themselves?
Oh, yes, they wash clean, but they dry dirty. You know what I mean? You know, one of those things. But in the first scene, Carmen said to her father, he said, Papa... She says, Papa, your wash is back.
Yeah.
She says, the laundry refused it. Now, her father, you see, her father is the king of all the gypsies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she and her father, Graham, are two of a kind.
Well.
They were cast in the same mold.
How's that?
Well, he's a little moldier. Here's the boy. Now, it seems that he loves fish. He's very fond of mussels,
uh-huh.
You know.
Mussels.
He's an old man, and he loves sea. And you can see him. He's bound for the river where he's going to fish for these mussels.
Yes.
And the next scene in the opera shows the muscle-bound old man going to the river, you see? So, old Graham, the king returns with a fish.
Uh-huh.
Just as he sits down, a cat jumps on a table and eats the king's fish.
Oh.
This makes the king mad. So to get back at the cat, the king goes over to the cat saucer and drinks the cat's milk. Wait a minute. Right here is where Rudy sings the Toreador song.
Good.
Yes. Now let's hear it.
Stop.
On that note before the last bit is where the curtain goes up on the second act. You see, you know, I'm trying to save the opera. My goodness, the way... And the second act of the opera, Graham, is in Madrid, Spain.
Uh-huh.
It is the day before the bullfight, and we see the hero, Escamillo.
Escamillo.
Do you remember it from the opera, Carmen?
Yes.
His right name is really Cuspidorsky.
Yes.
Well, they named him Cuspidorsky because he's a spitting image of his father, you see.
I see.
But anyhow, we see Escamillo. Uh-huh. And he's calling at the cigar factory where Carmen works.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yes, it is. See?
He sees her.
Uh-huh.
She works in the cigar factory, and he sees her.
Yeah.
She has on an Havana wrapper.
Oh.
So Carmen, and he says something to Carmen, and Carmen says, "How can you treat me like this?
Mm-hmm.
After all, I've given you the 10 best years of my life."
What does he say then?
He says, "My goodness, were they your best?" Well, anyhow, Carmen says, "I'll fix you for this." Because she's a cat, you know.
Yeah.
She's a cat.
So, yes.
She says, "I'll fix you." Yeah, I'm glad you said that.
Yes.
Because Carmen says there, she says, "I'll put the toughest bull in Spain against you tomorrow."
Yeah.
She says, "This bull is so tough that even cyclones ask permission to pass them." Well, the next scene is the bullfight.
Yes.
I'm not keeping you up, am I, Graham?
No, it's all right. All right.
I saw you yawning. I didn't know. But anyhow, the next scene is the bullfight, you know.
Yeah.
And the arena is gaily decorated, Graham.
Of course.
Royalty and peasants are turning out for the great battle of the year.
Uh-huh.
A carriage drives up to the entrance.
A carriage.
A nobleman steps out. He is a pillar of society.
Yes.
The crowd knows this, and they lean against him. But anyhow, this great nobleman, Graham,
yes,
you know who it is?
Who is it?
The Earl of Wintergreen.
It is.
Now, there's something for you.
It is.
Now, you see this Earl of Wintergreen. He buys 5 bags of peanuts to take into the royal box with him.
Yes.
He doesn't like peanuts, but he likes to blow up the bags and break them. Well, Carmen, too. Carmen is in the royal box.
Uh-huh.
And it is a day when rich and poor mingle. Isn't that lovely?
Oh, it's a nice day.
In fact, you see Carmen. You see Carmen, the cigarette girl, rubbing shoulders with the Earl of Wintergreen. Well,
<That's> all right. They didn't get that. I don't know.
I don't know. The general died at dawn, but that gag died 2 minutes ago. Anyhow, look here. The spectators, Graham.
Yeah.
The spectators are yelling for Escamillo,
they
the
are.
Bullfighter.
Uh-huh.
But he can't go out.
Why not?
Well, the cleaners didn't send back his costume.
Oh, I see.
But he has to go, because the crowd's yelling. So he runs into the arena in his underwear.
Yes.
And the bull sees red. Just at that time, Escamillo kills the bull.
Yes.
And at the finish of the opera, Carmen rushes into his arms and says, "Bye-bye."
What does he say?
He says, "Where are you going?" Carmen says, "Tacoma." Escamillo says, "Tacoma, Washington?" And she says, "No, take home a package of royal gelatin. Let her go, Ruth."
Something in the air that warns me to beware tonight. There's something in the air. There's music in the breeze. I never saw the stars so bright. There's something in the air. Though I find there's danger in your eyes, the thrill is new. I've been blind, but now I realize what love can do. I feel it everywhere. So whisper, you'll be mine tonight. There's something in the air. Thank you.
Deems Taylor spoke of them as the best chorus I have ever heard or hoped to hear. 36 husky Russians, ex-officers in the Tsar's Imperial Army, exiled forever from their native land. Our annual visitors, the Don Cossacks. They were organized in 1923 in a prison camp near Constantinople, and they have wandered across the face of the earth ever since with an En Voyage written across their League of Nations passports. Now at last they have found a homeland. Only recently they applied as one man for American citizenship in Washington, and just this morning each received his first papers. The Cossacks of the Don, under Serge Zharoff, sing a hymn from the liturgy of the Russian Church. We sing of thee, O Lord. The Kuban Cossacks, a war song. Very freely translated, it goes, crush, kill, show no pity to the Turk. Cossacks of the Kuban go forth to war without fear.
Hey, Graham, Just
a minute, Ed, please.
I want to talk to
just
you.
A minute, Mr. Wynn.
Oh, yes.
Do you think that you could make a cherry pie with artificial cherry flavor that would taste as good as one made with real cherries?
I never give it a thought.
Well, naturally you don't. Because you know that no synthetic cherry flavor ever made could taste as good as real cherries.
What's that, Graham?
That's why the flavor of from 35 to 50 fine, ripe cherries goes into every single package of Royal Cherry Gelatin.
50 cherries in one package of gelatin?
And this is no ordinary cherry
flavor. That's extravagant, if you ask me.
It comes from a special combination of fine Morello and Dalmatian cherries.
Think of that.
This combination is used exclusively because experiments have shown that it produces the finest cherry flavor.
What's that?
And what about the other royal gelatins? Well,
I don't know what he's talking about.
They're all made the same way.
What's
with
that?
Real flavor.
Yes. I want to see
never
a little
with
later,
synthetic substitutes added. Cheap on the product.
No, I'll listen, Graham.
These choice fruits come to Royal at the very peak of their flavor.
Think of
they
that.
Are purchased right in the fields where they are grown.
What do they cost?
For this reason, Royal can afford to give you real fruit flavor at a cost of only a penny a serving.
1 penny a serving for gelatin? That's as cheap as Social Security, Graham.
And the gelatin used in Royal is grade A.
Yes.
It is odorless, pure, wholesome. No wonder you can always depend on Royal gelatin for the only flavor you want.
That's right. That's
the true natural flavor of the fruit itself.
Wonderful.
Royal gelatin is available in 7 delicious fruit flavors.
Any chocolate?
Lemon, orange, lime, strawberry, raspberry, cherry, and pineapple.
No chocolate there.
Buy some tomorrow.
Yeah.
And be sure you get the genuine. Look for the name Royal on the package.
What's the name?
R-O-Y-A-L. Royal.
I mean, what's the name of the gelatin? Royal?
Royal.
I like chocolate myself.
We like to feel that we've hit a high mark tonight. We're going to try to equal it next week. Please be with us next Thursday night. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
Selection, has anybody seen my ship, is from Red Peppers. This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.